You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. The Warriors finally had another game. They played the Utah Jazz, won 106-94 in Game 1 of their second-round series. And I thought this was a particularly impressive win because of how comfortable it was, despite the Jazz having some really nice moments and the Warriors, you know, that was a great game, but not a spectacular, earth-shattering type of performance for them. And I wanted to talk about it with Adam Wardson of the Fast Break blog, also one of the few wonderful people who was still up late enough to do this, but I love talking to Adam no matter what. And the conversation runs about 20 minutes. I think you'll enjoy it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I think what surprised me the most about this game was that, you know, there were some real rough stretches for the Jazz, you know, especially the second and fourth quarters, the beginning of those. But overall, I thought they played reasonably well, but yet they still didn't really threaten the Warriors other than a really brief stretch.
I think that that's right, that it has to be pretty discouraging if you're the Jazz, because the Warriors didn't play particularly well, and it never felt like Utah was really all that threatening. They hung around. They didn't collapse entirely. They're a well-coached team. They play good defense, so they're going to stick around a bit. But there was no moment in this game where it felt like they were actually pushing the Warriors and threatening them.
And that's what made it fundamentally different from yesterday's game. I'm not sure if you watched it, when the Rockets just absolutely eviscerated the Spurs, which was, you know, it was a worst-case scenario. I think in many ways that's easier to shake off, because it's just, if everything goes wrong, then you're like, okay, well, we'll just have to do better. But when you do a lot right, like, I thought their pick and roll, Utah's pick and roll offense was pretty inspired. There were a couple times where they put, like, JaVale McGee through multiple staggered screens, and they were able to get good looks for Hayward, good looks for George Hill. And also, the Warriors missed a ton of open threes. I mean, Andre Iguodala is still 0 for the playoffs from long distance, and Curry was great from 2, but limited from 3, and yet there were still, you know, it was still a comfortable win.
The key stat for picking that out, and the Warriors talked about this a lot in the postgame comments, it's the 7 turnovers, which tied an all-time playoff low for the team. And the players kept talking about valuing possessions and getting the most out of possessions, that if they could just get shots up, they're a good enough offensive team that they're going to score at a high rate when they don't turn the ball over. And I think that's what we saw, that the Jazz did a number of things well. The Warriors had problems in a number of areas, but simply because the Warriors had enough possessions, they didn't turn the ball over that much. They forced a fair number of Jazz turnovers. None of it really mattered. The Warriors' efficiency was enough for them to take control of the game and to sort of coast through most of it.
And also, it goes along with something that I say a lot, but I think I do that because it's important, and that's that the best way to beat the Warriors is with their help. And other than the three-point line, the Warriors didn't do a whole heck of a lot of helping there. They executed well, and they were passing the ball better than I expected against the Jazz, just because part of it, and Nate Duncan talked about this a little bit on Twitter, and I want to go through some stats on it between games maybe, was that the Jazz don't force that many turnovers. They're a good defensive team. That's just not their strength. They do other things well. And that was true, that it didn't look like a lot of the turnovers were really forced. It was more them taking advantage of a bad pass or something like that.
Yeah, I think that the Warriors played with the right amount of focus that you would want for a game like this. There wasn't a great lull where they were making a lot of mistakes. There wasn't a tremendous burst of energy. There were a couple of nice runs, but nothing incredibly dominant. It was just a fairly routine game, which the Warriors controlled from start to finish. And if you're Utah, that's not the dynamic that you need for this series. That's a easy recipe for a sweep or maybe a 5-game series. They need to find a way to change things up right now. And there were no hints at how they might do that in the first game.
There were a couple things about this game from Utah's perspective that surprised me as somebody who watches them pretty frequently. One was how comfortable they were switching Gobert onto Curry. You know, they do a lot of kind of hanging back. And I said before the series, it was part of my preview for The Athletic, that I didn't think that idea would work against the Warriors. And they went to kind of a level of the ball defense against the Clippers eventually, but that's a little bit different against the Warriors too. The second thing, which was, I just never anticipated Quinn Snyder feeling it this way, is that against the Warriors, you kind of have to tailor your rotations a little bit to what they do, because their talent is just that high end. And I was very surprised to see Quinn Snyder keep George Hill basically as the only starter, or the only key starter, on the floor at the beginning of the second and fourth quarters, at the beginning of it, instead of one of Gobert or Hayward, because that also separated him from Curry.
The last point you make is a key one. I think that they ran into huge rotation problems when they took both Hayward and Gobert off the floor. By my quick check, something I think about 6 minutes at the total at the beginning of the second, beginning of the fourth, with both those guys off the floor. And I think the Jazz were outscored by a total of 16 points during that limited time period. So really sort of disastrous in the course of the game for them during that stretch. So that's one area where I think they can make adjustments. They can try to field a more balanced rotation with their key players in the game and hopefully stop some of the bleeding there if you're the Jazz. But the Gobert on Curry point's an interesting one because they did seem comfortable with him out there. He played Curry well, even though he got spun around on that one possession. The area where Gobert really seemed exposed, which was interesting to me, was when the Warriors got him in the high post and were able to pass around him. So when they were keeping him away from the basket and away from the rim, West had some great passes to cutters. Draymond had a good passing game, moving the ball as well. And it really seemed to open up the Warriors' offense when they were able to get Gobert out away from the basket and sort of off the ball, so stranded outside of the play where he's not really an impact.
And that ties in with something I wrote a little bit about in my piece, that one of the issues that the Warriors forced in this, and we actually saw the Jazz use this to their advantage against the Clippers in the last round, which is when the team has to play small, particularly at power forward, bringing their center out is so much more devastating because that team does not have a good help defenders. And so while Utah, you know, guys like Joe Ingles, Gordon Hayward can execute the scheme and do a good job, if there's a cutter, if there's a driver, I don't trust them to make that shot hard, especially not to do so without fouling. And when Gobert was in the high post, or when he was, you know, spun around on Curry, though, as you said, that was more the aberration, they didn't have the tools to recover from that in the ways that they normally do.
Yeah, you look up and down the lineup here. Favors obviously isn't the player that he normally is. He looked really bad tonight and didn't really look mobile at all on the defensive end. And then you're left with guys like Diaw, Ingles, Joe Johnson. None of those are impact defenders, and they're not players who are going to be able to provide help or really bail anybody out if Gobert is away from the basket. So if the Warriors are able to keep Gobert out of the frame, essentially, and not have him be an impact, they're going to get what they want offensively, and it's not clear that the Jazz have a counterplay. Like you said, the Warriors go small. What else can you do?
And on the line of no counterplay, something that was really, it wasn't surprising, but just it was intriguing in the way that the Warriors have so many guys that they can throw on Gordon Hayward and make his life difficult. Not everybody is perfect on him, and I thought Luke Richard and Bob Mute did a nice job in the Clippers series for the most part when he had that assignment. But the difference is when the Warriors are in less, you know, they're not ideal pairing, whatever you want to call that, they're still really good on him. Klay Thompson, Andre Iguodala, Durant, who I thought did a nice job on Hayward, Draymond Green. So he can't get the space that is necessary. And I think he'll do better in the future games than he did today. But it's a reminder that these are not favorable conditions comparatively like they were some of the time in the last series.
The matchups just seem incredibly tough for Utah, whether you pick out Hayward, whether you pick out the front line, the backcourt. There's not a matchup here where they can look and say, yeah, we've got this covered. This isn't an issue. Hayward's productivity throughout the game seemed to fall off. The more defenders that the Warriors ran at him, the rougher and out of the flow he seemed, until the point that he was just a total non-factor. In the second half, he scored 2 points total. That's pretty incredible for the Warriors to reduce him to be that much of a non-factor. Even if they can't do that in future games, I think that they found a defensive look that they like, slashing those different guys, providing help. And like they said, just putting a body on him. They were able to be physical with him and prevent him from getting the spots where he could be effective.
And again, the idea that Utah is going to struggle to get easy baskets is certainly something that they should be concerned by, especially considering they did a decent job getting open threes in this game. Not perfect, and I think there were times when the Warriors weren't amazing executing defensively, particularly on Rodney Hood, just the scouting report of not letting him go to his left. That's what he's more comfortable doing. That happened a few times. I think that was in the third or the fourth quarter. And those sorts of things will get tightened up over the course of a playoff series. And yes, the Jazz can do better. I mean, switching up their rotations would help a little bit. Not having Shelvin Mack guarding Stephen Curry. I thought Mack did an all right job. I thought he did a pretty good job, actually, offensively. But defensively, he's a disaster on Curry, which is, you know, I wrote a thing kind of praising Mack at one point, and Jazz fans got all mad about it. And it's like, you know, he's not going to guard Steph Curry. Now, I'm not gonna kill him for sucking on Steph. That's just something that's going to happen.
Curry ran free when he was on him, and I have to believe that the Jazz are going to correct that in the next game. But looking forward, it's not enough for the Jazz just to play their pace and their style of game. They have to prevent the Warriors from playing in their comfort zone. On the flip side, the Warriors basically just have to go out there and execute their style of game, and the Jazz can do whatever they want. If the Warriors are playing their style of basketball, they're going to win. So there's really an asymmetrical element to this series where the Jazz have a whole lot more to do than the Warriors. And the Warriors' talent right now, having people relatively healthy, having them integrated, there are just so many different looks that they can throw out there. It's a horrible coaching assignment if you're an opponent.
Right. And there aren't hiding places for your guys defensively. There are a lot of challenges for your team offensively. And also, it was distinctly different than the Blazers series in terms of the bench players who looked good and how they looked good. But it was another part of that story. I mean, David West was wonderful, particularly offensively, but I thought he did a nice job defensively too. I think he tied for the team lead in deflections with 4. But not only that, he had 7 assists and 3 secondary assists, so those are hockey assists. That's awfully impressive for a guy who played less than 18 full minutes. And then Ian Clark, you know, that chemistry stayed on. And then I thought JaVale was a little bit shaky, and Andre was great defensively, but didn't really do it offensively. And so it was a different profile than against the Blazers, but it still worked.
Yeah, they have the luxury of just being able to rotate different players and to find whoever's having the hot night or whoever has the right skills for the matchup. I think that Clark will continue to be a factor in this series. He's played the Jazz well in the past, and I think he gives them a nice look, particularly if he's picking the spots against the Jazz and the rotation backcourt. West, too, I think has the potential to be a big factor in this series, particularly the way that he can force Gobert to pull out and to change his defensive presence. There are just so many different looks. You don't need a JaVale necessarily to have a dominant series. You'd like a little bit of offense from Iguodala, but clearly they were fine without any real offense from him this evening. It's that type of flexibility and the variety of looks they can throw at you. It's a huge luxury. It just gives them a massive margin for error. They don't need everything to go their way. They can have a bunch of large things go against them and still be pretty dominant in a game.
Margin for error is a good way of putting it. And part of the benefit of going to a slower pace against a superior opponent is that you reduce the number of possessions and you increase the variance. So I think that's something good for Utah to do. But the problem is you still have to have some real tough sledding against the Warriors, especially if they're not going to turn the ball over. And I don't expect that to continue game in, game out. And what exacerbates that issue, and I talked about this before the series, but Utah not really running in transition is a big problem as well, because it's where the Warriors are worst defensively. And if you're not forcing there, you're also not forcing as many fouls. And I think that's a way that they're giving the Warriors a little bit more of a margin on their own end for error.
It's a good point. There were several possessions where it almost seems like the Jazz's patience on offense hurt them, that they kept moving the ball, they kept waiting for a play to develop, and then they end up suddenly with 4 or 5 seconds left on the shot clock and they're in isolation against Draymond Green. And that's not where you want to be. The Warriors are perceptive enough on defense, smart enough on defense, that they can really funnel you to their best defenders and lock you into situations where you're not going to get a good shot. So the Jazz, I don't know if they're doing themselves a great favor by playing that slowly and running out the clock the way that they have in some of these possessions. Like you said, the greater variance comes from really pushing the Warriors in transition, and they were not pushed this evening. They really didn't have to face almost any fast breaks to put them back on their heels.
It didn't help that Draymond was also incredible on a couple of fast break possessions, including that one, I think it was Ingles and Hayward, where he defended Ingles long enough to make the pass and then stripped Hayward. It was awfully impressive, and he can do that. You know, it's Draymond and Danny Green for whatever reason. You know, those two guys, I mean, they're both intelligent defenders who work really hard at it. But I think one of the strangest moments in this game was, I think it was in the beginning of the fourth quarter, when on two consecutive possessions, the Jazz ended up, and it looked like at least partially deliberately, posting up Draymond. And I'm just sitting there going, what are you doing? Like, this is not a successful possession for you, even with Derek Favors, who is a wonderful player, but that's not how you use him in this series.
That stood out for me as very strange, but it struck me as probably just a frustration thing at that point.
It could be.
They had tried basically everything in the third quarter, had gained no ground, and were then at the beginning of the fourth watching the game slip away against the Warriors' reserves. They may have just reverted to old habits. And when you're up against Draymond Green, old habits are often the worst thing because he knows exactly what you're going to do and can shut you down before you even do it. And that's what happened during those efforts by the Jazz. They were completely blown up by Draymond's excellent defense.
One other small thing I wanted to mention that I just found fascinating was that in this game, Stephen Curry was excellent inside the arc. He was, I think the final numbers were 6-for-7 on twos and 1-for-4 on threes. And then Kevin Durant was 3-for-9 in the restricted area and made almost all of his jump shots.
Yeah, it's one of those games where how close you are to Gobert probably dictates how well you're going to shoot. Durant was faced up against him close to the basket several times and missed those shots. Curry, for whatever reason, was able to get around him, but was often on Gobert out by the three-point line when the pick-and-roll switched on to him. So it's one of those quirks that I think you could probably tie to a very specific person, one of the NBA's best defenders.
Makes total sense. Anything else? The other thing we should mention, at least briefly, was the atmosphere. I did think the crowd was a little bit better, more amped up because of the We Believe reunion, I guess you'd say, a tribute, whatever you want to say. And the fact that they did it on court between the first and second quarters was interesting, too.
I'm glad that they did it. It's a fun thing to commemorate. There's still a lot of fans around who were there in the building for We Believe or were watching at home and remember how exciting and thrilling that was. It's hard to believe it was a decade ago, but it's fun to see those guys and fun to remember just how far the franchise has come. I do think it gave a little bit of extra shot of energy. There were still a lot of fans leaving early at 6 minutes left when the game was over, which was a little disappointing to see for a playoff game. It's my view that this is a special team and you should try to take every minute in of this team that you can because you don't know how long it's going to be before we have another amazing team or if we ever do have a team that's up to this caliber and this level. So not moments to be squandered or missed. And We Believe team taught us that these things can change very quickly, so you should enjoy the moment while you can.
Wholeheartedly agree, and that was something that came into clear focus, though you know it, of course, as a longtime season ticket holder, when working on the book, is just the idea, which, you know, it's prevalent, of just how both in the NBA generally and for the Warriors specifically, the good times can be fleeting, and they can always end at the drop of a hat.
You just never know. The story of We Believe, how quickly that changed from a team that everybody thought was ascending, really had a core, to something that was partially blown apart with the Jay Rich trade and then fully blown apart the next year when Baron Davis decided to leave. These things unravel. You can never be sure that what you have today is what you're going to have the next game or the next season. So all you can do is enjoy this incredible run that we've had from the Warriors. It's certainly, for fans new and old, an amazing time, and everyone should enjoy it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Great to talk to you.
Thanks again to Adam Wardson for taking the time. You can read him at the San Jose Mercury News' Fast Break blog. Does a great job there, and you can also follow him on Twitter at GSW Fast Break. And that's GSW FASTBREAK, I can spell. And yeah, I thought this was an impressive performance, that we went through it pretty well. And the Warriors need to have games like this where, you know, things go right. Not everything. This wasn't the first quarter against the Blazers or anything like that, but they were able to generate reliable shots and they were able to have cleaner looks than their opponent, which is a great calibrator for any NBA game, but especially for the Warriors. And the fact that they were able to do that and then also win the turnover margin 13-7 was really impressive and took away a lot of the margin that the Jazz or any other opponent would have with them. So plan is to have an episode tomorrow. I'm not exactly sure what it'll be on, but I'm confident I'll figure something out. And then, of course, no matter what, there will be an episode on Thursday about the game, and then I'll do one on the weekend about Game 3, toying with whether I want to do one Saturday night and have it come out or do something Sunday, working through all that. But the game being a little earlier certainly does help the argument of just putting something out that night for those of you who want to listen on Sunday. So if you have any feedback on the show, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com, @DannyLarue on Twitter. You can also support the show by leaving a rating, leaving a review in the podcast player of your choosing. You can subscribe, download every episode. Those things are always big helps. You can check out our sponsors. SeatGeek is the big one. LO Warriors is the promo code there. And also, you can check out my work. My game analysis piece is already up before this is recorded at The Athletic. And then the Every Player piece will be up at some point in the near future, probably before most of you listen to this, though. I can't promise it. It's most of the way done now, but it depends on when Dunked On happens. And for Dunked On, Nate Duncan and I will talk about this game, as well as Isaiah Thomas's massive performance in Celtics Wizards. Probably hit some news as well. So you can listen to that if you want to as well. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.